Blog Talk Radio.
You ready to rock this town by now?
Greetings and welcome to the 64th episode of Rock This Town Radio at TC. I am your host, TC Clark, and along with my production assistant, Cuddles the Cat, we're coming to you from our Bloomfield studio in the 412, that's Pittsburgh, PA. Tonight is a very special night. It's our first ever show with a musical guest, and it's an evening with Jeff Fetterman. And Jeff, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we're going to have fun. And as always, Carl's along. And Carl has a long history with Jeff. Hi, Carl.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jeff, it's really good to have you on, man. Seriously.
Good to hear from you guys.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've been actually trying to, you know, I mean, we've been talking about getting you on for quite a while. So I'm glad it finally happened.
Yeah, me too. Very cool.
Tell them about your connection, fellas.
You want to go?
Well, I'll start this. In Bradford, my folks came in 1972, and we bought a music store, and then we moved it to Pine Street. And I came back in the 80s to take care of it. 87, I came back from New York. And at that point, we had lots of young gentlemen come in. I actually ran the place, you know, sort of a safe place to people. And we had all sorts of prospective, you know, guitarists come in. And one of them, of course, was Jeff. You were there like every week, at least for one day, you know, checking out guitars and that sort of thing. And I'm pretty sure, I'm like 90% sure I sold you your first guitar.
I think you did, yeah. Yeah, I always like going down there and checking out all the guitars and all the equipment and stuff. It was a kind of like a second home hanging out there. It was really cool.
Well, that's exactly what it was. As I said, there were a bunch of young kids that came in, and one of them was my former almost stepson, John Shearer. I don't know if you remember John or not. And Andy White and Jamie Stewart. And lots of them came in, and it was just like a good place for you to come in after school and hang out. And to be honest, there wasn't a lot to do in Bradford. So I was always glad to have that store open
yeah.
for you guys.
Oh, that was a staple of being in town when we were young kids. You had to go there and hang, you know. It was a good time.
And we had,
Jeff,
and I even played good music too. Don't forget that. It
yes.
was the shit you heard on
yeah.
WSB.
You were the first one that showed me how off the wall Frank Zappa was.
There you go.
I think I did that with everybody.
Yeah. And you turned me on to a really great blues player, Ian Moore.
Yes. I remember
yeah.
that. You know, and that was
there
one of
go.
The things too, was that, you know, I wanted to have a place where music was important and that you had a chance to hear other things and try to, you know, expand your knowledge from, you know, hair bands and shit like that. There's a lot more than that out there.
Oh, definitely.
And then again, the other thing, too, is we had our guitar player, Gene Johnson, who is a blues
yes.
player. I know that Gene had a lot of influence on you and that sort of thing. So, you know, I'm just really happy that we were able to do that. And I'm so proud of you, Jeff. I want you to know
Thank
that.
You.
I'm really proud of you.
Thank you. It means a lot.
Now,
okay, I think
Carl,
that's enough
you
of that.
Carl, I mentioned Gene Johnson, and I know, Jeff, you really idolize this guy. Did you take any lessons from him, or did you play with him or anything?
Yeah, actually, Gene and I, we kind of did a few lessons here and there, not a lot, but we did a few when I was younger. Because he was like the encyclopedia of blues. He knew pretty much
oh,
everything.
Oh, God, yes. Yes.
Great slide player, very knowledgeable on different open tunings and stuff, and opened up my mind to a lot of different feels and stuff like that for blues. And then actually he played in one of my blues bands years ago. He was added as a slide player in one of my blues bands, and he stayed for, well, I don't know, 6 months, a year or so, something like that. He played with us for a while.
So you'd list him as one of your influences, definitely.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Growing up and everything.
Yeah. Yes.
Were you were you mostly self-taught, Jeff?
Mostly self-taught. There used to be a fellow who I would always give kudos to till the day I'm gone. And I know Carl knew him very well, Sammy Scott.
Wing.
I know Sammy.
Like 13. Yeah. And Sammy actually took me under his wing and let me go to him on his shows and stuff when he was playing all the local clubs and venues. And they would stop. I don't know if you remember the old Powell's Pharmacy at the corner of Main and East Main.
Oh, sure.
Oh, God.
And I'd stand there on the corner, and he'd pick me up in the band bus, and they would take me out all night. And I'd put equipment with them and haul and be the roadie and help them set up. And he showed me pretty much everything about how to set equipment up and mix and stuff like that. Sammy was a very big influence on me as a child growing up.
How old were you when this was happening?
I was 13. I was 13 years old.
Wow.
He was 30. So he had taken a 13-year-old kid on all these gigs, and I was, like, soaking up as much as I could as far as knowledge and watching and learning. But mostly self-taught, and I would watch those guys play all night long. And then they'd drop me off at the corner. It was called the bus stop. And I'd run up to the house, and I would and pull out my guitar at 2:33 in the morning and visualize in my mind what I saw them playing that night and try to figure
wow.
out chords and stuff.
Fantastic.
And also reading music. I can't read music or anything like that, but I'm all taught by ear because when I was growing up, all we had was Guitar Player magazine with the tabs, and I wasn't really a good tablature reader, so most of, I'd say 90% of my training is just by ear, by listening on the album or the cassette tape and putting in hour after hour after hour nonstop.
Yeah.
Trying to fix that were already recorded.
Wow. So we got the childhood part done. And I want to just jump ahead because I know you were in a bunch of different bands. And then finally you kind of broke out to yourself. I mean, you weren't really members of the bands, right? You just kind of played along until you broke out for yourself.
A lot of the cover bands I played with, I was a permanent member of them, but actually it was fun for a while, but I needed more challenge. For a while it got a little boring and stale.
Yeah, it seems like it'd get boring quick for you.
Okay, so I'm gonna
step this up to about, I guess, 12 years ago, 14 years ago, really, when you and I started hanging around, working a little bit and stuff. And I got to tell the 38 special story. Year was that? Do you remember? 2010, somewhere around there.
It's been a while.
Okay.
Quite a while ago.
Yeah, it was about then because I was still working to sell Mecca Beverage. And 38 Special was the headliner at the Cattaraugus County Fair in Little Valley, New York. And Jeff was chosen to be the opening band. So I remember in Bradford, we're loading up my truck and your truck and everything. And we went over there and we got all the equipment set up. And I think the stands held like 3,000 people or something like that. And we get all set up, and Jeff and I are standing there on the stage looking out and seeing the place fill in. And I said to Jeff, I go, man, this is the big time. And you said, yeah, but tomorrow I'm back to being a fucking janitor. one of my favorite lines ever. I almost peed my pants. But the thing is, at that time, and I'm going to bring this up, and I'm not going to, without bashing anybody, but at that time, it seemed like you were really stuck in the mud. And I think the reason was Now, John McGuire has been a wonderful drummer. He's like a rock for you. How long has John been playing with you now? 20 years, something like that?
John's been on for about a good 15 years, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But at this time, you had a bass player as a friend of ours, and he's a phenomenal bass player, but his life was in turmoil. And
yeah, he had some
real issues. You know, we never knew if he was going to even show up or not. And half the time we had to go pick him up. And I think then, when you made the decision, it had been one of the hardest decisions you ever had to make, because he was a good friend. He was a great bass player, but you had to let him go. And I think that was a big, big turning point for you, because along comes Ralph. And like I said, I'm calling this the Ralph years. Along comes Ralph, and now you got a great, great bass player. Steady. The way you three work together is just amazing. You know, you're just so in sync with each other. And another thing I want to bring up is when we were back in that time, and I said you were stuck in the mud, here you are in Bradford, PA, where there's only like one place would even book you. You had to drive 100 miles to get any bookings because you're an original artist in a cover band town. And because it was a small town, there's a little backstabbing bullshit going on everywhere. And it just astounds me. And I'm going to be a fan here for a second. How great of a guitar player you are, how great of a musician, a songwriter, and everything. And nobody in that little fucking town even realizes it. So,
well,
I mean, very few do.
I appreciate the compliment. You know, I don't really much worry about what other people say or care. I just kind of make sure as long as I'm happy and doing what I'm doing, that's what matters. So
Exactly. And wherever you have to
I want to step in here for a second and just say something to Jeff. You know, you're not the first one, and I think this is very much an attitude within Bradford that they don't support their own. I don't know if you know him or not, but there was an author by the name of Dave Poyer who was writing and did some, you know, and did some stuff, and he tried to get his books into the bookstores and things like that, and nobody would do it, and guess who did? Our music store were the first ones to support him and Bradford, and we made a point of that. And if our store was still going around, I can guarantee you we would have gotten you gigs. But I wasn't there at that time. We had already closed the store in the 90s. So, but I just wanted to say that Bradford has that, you know, in their DNA, unfortunately. I think that's the way it is.
Go
ahead, Jeff.
Unfortunately, what I have found from here in town is, and speak negative of anything, but people here don't want to see anybody trying to do something different and getting out and thinking outside the box. And if you're unique in a way, or if you don't follow the great crowd or something, then you're looked at as kind of like an outsider. And unfortunately, a lot of people in this area don't have a lot of aspirations to become anything better. Maybe they do, I don't know, but maybe they just don't have the courage to get out there and actually try to do that. And when you try to break that mold and do your own thing, then they look at you and they do kind of degrade you, and they do tend to say negative things. And a lot of it is out of not having enough courage to try to do that themselves. So that's what I've come to find out from here in town. But like I said, if that's the way that they want to think and act, then that's, let them do that. I'm doing what I want to do. And I'm happy with myself and the decisions that I've made, you know, as far as my music career and stuff. With the decisions I've made, I've made many, many hard decisions and emotional decisions. But in the long run, I knew they'd be the best. So that's why I've done what I've done.
I don't you know, this show's not about me, but Jeff, that's the exact same thing I ran into when I moved down here, a better opportunity. You know, I started and I was running the vet jam. I had it going. I had another vet jam ready to go, but people swooped in under me and said, well, he moved, he's gone. And a good friend of mine, he described it perfectly. He calls it crabs in a bucket.
Yeah.
It's like one crab's trying to crawl out of the bucket, and the other ones are trying to pull them back down. And that's basically what happens. And it's good that you had to change your environment, which means Ralph came on, you know, the band went in a different direction, and you started recording. I mean, I don't know what you had out there before, but you started recording, and it seemed like you started writing more, too, once Ralph came on.
I got to the point where I just needed to take things more serious, and some of the members I was playing with weren't as serious and didn't want the outcome as badly as I did. And I just kind of had to break away from that, and, you know, I had to step away from the cover bands, and I don't have any ill will towards the cover bands here in town. If that's what they'd like to do, I mean, that's great. Do it.
Yeah, sure. They're doing what they love.
You know. Yes, do what you love. And playing music.
And none of us will ever knock that.
It's what it's all about. If you love what you're doing, just do it. I love playing music. I love playing cover bands for years and years. I loved it. But I always wanted something more. When I was young, I wanted to be good enough to play a guitar. I got good enough to play guitar, then I wanted to be good enough to play in a band. I got playing a band, then I wanted to be good enough to play in a band out on a job. I got good enough to do that. Then I wanted to be good enough to reach out and travel, and I started getting good enough to do that. It was always that next step, and a lot of people just didn't want to take that next step, and I couldn't stop. I needed to keep going.
Yeah, so that's the problem too. Like when a quick story about Pat Monahan from Train. He's from Erie. And the band was getting big, and he was getting big, and they had an offer to go to New York City. And all the other guys in the band said, well, you know, we got day jobs. We got families. We can't go. So he left. And then he ended up in San Francisco, you know, forming a band, Train, out there. And I called back to the keyboard player they had and said, you remember that melody we were working on that we never had words to? He goes, yeah. He goes, I'll give you $1,000 for it if you still got it. He goes, okay, cool. He sent it to him. That was Drops of Jupiter.
Yep. I know the guy who wrote the piano piece, and he settled on $1,000, and he should have taken part of the publishing because he'd be sitting pretty right now.
No doubt. But he didn't think that was going anywhere either. But that's the example right there. It's like when you got one guy that really has aspirations, and the other guy's, hey, this is just a hobby for us, basically.
Right.
You know, and I'd never knock a cover band, Jim Hillier, if you're listening. Keep rocking, buddy. But, okay, let's get going to the music here. I think everybody's tired of hearing us talk.
They're tired of hearing you talk, okay? I think we need to have more Jeff, though.
I know. All right. Is that why you shut up, Carl?
Okay. Exactly.
you know your place, buddy. Okay, Jeff.
Absolutely.
The first, what I'm going to do is like two songs at a time. So the first album, and we're going to cover three of your albums, Bottle Full of Blues, came out in 2015. Now, was this your first actual full album?
Actually, it was a full album. I did like an EP before that called Leaving Home. It was kind of like a demo type deal. They had like six tracks on it, but the Bottle Full of Blues was the first full production album I did.
Okay. Did the songs from the EP go on to that
or was this all
new stuff? Okay.
Yeah, that was all new stuff. Okay. Yes.
And I want to bring up too, real quick before we get into it, every one of your albums are self-produced, aren't they? Basically self-marketed. All that, like you don't have any label affiliation whatsoever.
None.
And
I'm an independent.
How's that working out? I mean, as far as money goes, coming in on this.
Well, money wise, it's, you know, it can be good and bad. You take 100% of everything, but if you're not making anything, then you're getting 100% of nothing, you know.
Yeah, but, this is true.
Distribution, stuff like that. It's tough. It can be tough with distribution, but you have avenues on the internet to get you out there. Like this is a song, Bottle Full of Blues, that I wrote. I wrote that song in like 2 days, 3 days at the most, and that's been my most successful song I've ever written. 2.5 million hits on YouTube, so I get monetization from that, and it's my biggest selling album that I've had to date.
Nice.
So it's, you know, the internet is very, very helpful with things. I mean, I've reached out all over the globe, everywhere. I've got, you know, people who buy my music as far as Belgium, Germany, Brazil, everywhere, you know. So
Wow. The
internet helped that. So if I didn't have that, obviously, I wouldn't be able to reach those people.
Okay.
But,
well, let's listen to two songs off this. On my set. Time.
But it's so hard to read in color when all you see is black and white. Come tomorrow, no more sorrow, I'll be doing all right. It won't be easy when you see me. Will you run out of time?
Okay, Paradise and Out of Time off Bottle Full of Blues. What do you want to tell us about these songs, Jeff?
Oh, what would you like to know?
Well, first of
all... Okay, who was the keys player on the last tune? Because he was great.
That's just what I was going to ask.
The keyboard player, that was recorded over in Warren, Pennsylvania with Anthony Brown. Anthony has a studio over there. Well, he did. Now he's over in Youngsville or somewhere right now, but we did it in his studio when that album came out. He played keyboards and stuff on that album for me. He added some stuff that I wanted to fill up, so he did a good job on it.
Oh, that's nice. Did you you recorded this album in Warren then at his studio?
It was done in Warren, Pennsylvania, yes.
Ah. Okay, and I'm sorry, but I cut out Bottle Full of Blues. It's just a little long. I got a short attention span audience, you know.
So, right, that's okay.
But yeah, those two songs in Paradise, I think that's one of my favorite songs by you. And you know, fucker, you put me in a bad spot. Because I asked you. I said, hey, give me about 12 songs, you know, that, you know, you might really want to feature and all that. And you said, oh, I hate listening to myself. Pick them yourself.
I do. I don't like listening to myself play at all. That's why, you know, with these interviews and stuff, I let whoever wants to pick, they can pick. Because after you're writing the song for so long and putting it together,
yeah,
then you show it to the band and you work it out. Then you take it to the studio and you do it over and over again. Then you go out and you play it for a while. And at a point, it gets to be at the point it's like, okay, you know, how much more can I listen to myself?
I've read that so many times about artists, like the most popular songs. They're so fucking tired of them. They got to play them. So, Carl, anything else you want to add about these first two?
Well, you know, one of the things I do want to ask in listening to your playing, I hear some influences. And if you, you know, listen to your playing and in your playing, what famous or well-known blues guitarists would you say were an influence to you?
Well, a lot of people, I've heard people say that I sound like I'm influenced by Eric Clapton. I hear people tell me I'm influenced and sound somewhat like Kenny Wayne Shepherd or Stevie Ray Vaughan. You know, they're all influences.
Right.
Everybody who's just a well-rounded musician influences me. I've had kids 15, 20 years younger than me influence me on things that they've done. So I'm influenced by anything and everything that's just going to help me become a better player.
Well, I will tell you, I will add one more person to that, because I heard a lot of B.B. King in there. I heard a lot of B.B. King.
I like B.B. King. I like all those old blues guys, you know, John Lee Hooker, Albert King, B.B. King, Freddie King. There's so many great musicians, Muddy Waters, all of them. I love them all. I love listening to them all. The Allman Brothers, everybody, you know. I mean, I listen to pretty much anything and everything.
Okay, so we got two more songs off Bottle Full of Blues. And this first one, I'm definitely going to have to hear who the influence of this one was. And I think this is one of your favorite songs to play out, too, because it's such a fun song. It's called Funky Candy. And after that, we're going to play Down and Out.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
Ready for some Funky Candy?
Funky Candy. In my pocket.
play the blues for you.
Absolutely killer. Okay, I have listed the harmonica was Otis James.
Yes, he's from, I believe he's from Warren as well.
Man, that guy can play.
He's a good
that
dude.
Guy can play. Okay, now, I played this song, you know, your guitar playing, of course, is phenomenal like it is in every song, but I played this kind of because I was curious if this is a song that you put together over there, like you found this harmonica player and said, let's try to do something. I mean, I don't ever recall you playing a song, you know, when I've seen you play.
Actually, that song came about. I was just screwing around playing guitar and I come up with that riff. Around that, like a piece of the puzzle, and I put it together. And then when we were in the studio, I decided to put a harmonica part in it because of the fact that I just wanted to break it up a little bit and have something different, you know, like some different colorization, stuff like that. And I knew Otis from playing with my other friend's band, so I contacted him, and he came in the studio and put the harmonica parts to it.
Yeah, I'd say there's more than parts there, man. That was phenomenal. And Carl?
Well, you know, one of the things I think that you know, shows is that when you're in the studio, you're still composing. You're still, you're still, you know, wondering, okay, there's something here that we have to do, and what can I do to, you know, it's like, almost like, you know, we talk about it in film terms as guerrilla filmmaking, that you get to a place, oh, well, there's this great scene here, we're going to put that in, and that sort of thing, and that's sort of what you're doing here, it seems like.
Right, yes, same thing, pretty much.
Like you,
instead of visual, it's audible, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's so many things that you can put in, but of course you can only put in so much because you don't want to clutter it up too much. But there's also a lot of things that you can't leave out as well, because then you don't really have much of a song. You know,
right.
There's got to be, there has to be all different types of instrumentation and voicing and stuff like that, you know, so melodies, counter melodies and such, you know, you have to have all that to put the puzzle together.
And the one thing I would say on that is it's almost like putting the eyebrows on it. That's a term that a filmmaker, can't remember who, but putting the eyebrows on, you know, just touching things up and making them better, you know, and that's what you're doing there.
And there's probably a lot of songs like this one. When you walked into the studio, you had a certain idea, and when you walked out, it was a whole different thing. I mean,
absolutely. That happens a lot. You get one song down,
okay,
and then you figure you know it, then you bring it in and present it to the band. And, you know, I'm the main songwriter. I write all the songs and everything, but I always give everybody the freedom to do what they are hearing or what they feel might be best. But, of course, I have the final decision on it, but a lot of times they're bringing in stuff that I wouldn't have thought of that only made the song a lot better. So I'm not taking full credit for the finished production, because there's other people who are putting in their influences and stuff as well that the songs become the final product.
There's a good Dave Grohl clip about that he realized that, you know, he's a songwriter. He wanted everything done this way. Then he realized, I'm the fucking problem here. I'm walking out of the room, let these guys figure it out, and then you come back, and the final product was fantastic.
Yeah,
okay, Carl.
Yeah.
Carl, were you chair dancing? Were you chair dancing on Funky Candy?
Oh, not only was I chair dancing, I was saying, oh, my God, it's so much funk and all that sort of stuff. That's took me back to the 70s funk, man. That was great.
Where the hell did that come from, Jeff?
That just come out of a riff, just dicking around at the house. That's all. We actually used that as just a filler. That's just a fill song, just to put up some time on the album.
But you play it out, you play it live. I've seen you play it a couple of times.
I don't play it out. I think I put it out twice in the last 4 years. You know, it's just kind of...
I was there for both of them then. Because I remember hearing it twice.
I don't play, you know, because it's basically a simplistic song, and it's not even... To me, it's just a filler, and it doesn't have any complexity to a song at all. So I avoid it pretty much. There's a lot of songs I've heard.
I do want to say about Funky Candy is I do believe in my heart of hearts that was a bow down to Chaka Khan. Now, it might not be, but God damn it, I heard Chaka on that.
He's a big Chaka Khan fan. So, but it was cool because, you know, I like it because it shows your diversity, you know. I mean, you're labeled a blues guitarist, and I don't think of you any, you know, as just a blues guitarist. And as we go through the music, we're going to see all the different sides of Jeff Fetterman. So we're going to move on to the next album, which was 9 Miles to Nowhere. And this came out in 2017, I believe, and I think you confirmed that. And we're going to listen to four songs from this one. And then let's get the first two under our belts, and then we can talk about it. First comes Somebody Get Me a Doctor, and then Brand New Day.
Somebody get me a doctor. buddy, get me a doctor, 'cause now I'm gonna crash.
All right, that was Brand New Day, and before that, Somebody Get Me a Doctor. Now, Jeff, on this album, it really seems like you went back to the blues roots to me. I mean, it's a...
Yeah, more so on 9 Miles of Nowhere, I started getting back to the roots of more bluesy stuff, yes. That's
Carl?
My comfort zone.
I'm just, processing a lot of this. That's really good, solid representation of standard blues. There's a lot of Chicago blues in there. There's just so much in there that, and it's well done. I mean, it's really well done, Jeff. I mean, I don't. A lot of people may think we're just doing this in terms of you're a Bradford boy and we've got connection, but we wouldn't be doing this if this wasn't good music. And I just want you to know that, okay?
Well, thanks.
It's really well done, sir.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Where did you record this album, Jeff? Same place?
That album was recorded in Buffalo at the Google It All studio.
Ah. Well, tomorrow night, Tyler Calkins is on with Marshmallow Overcoat, and they also recorded at that studio.
What I found out is after I recorded there, a lot of local musicians kind of jumped on that wagon there and started going over there. It was actually the first one from this area that actually went over to that studio, and then the rest kind of followed through after I got there, so...
What kind of experience was that, being there? I mean, you recorded in Warren in somebody's basement. Now you go to, basically the major leagues.
It's just a studio, It's just a place to make and create music. It's, bigger. It has a little bit more of tools to work with, but overall, it's pretty much the same. You're there to go to work. And do the best that you can do,
Good. Now, do they provide a producer, engineers, all that stuff, or does that work?
Yeah. There was an engineer there. His name was Brad Lauker. He did my engineering and stuff, and we just went in and we recorded everything live on that album.
Wow. It's incredible. But we got two more songs off that one, and I think they follow right along the lines of you getting back to your roots with this album. The album was 9 Miles to Nowhere, and we have Early Grave and These Arms of Mine.
night from the rattlesnake bite that'll lead to an early grave. Lead to an early grave. Gonna lead to an early grave. Lead to an early grave. I'm gonna lead me to an early grave.
arms of mine. Just come back to me, baby, into these arms of mine.
Those two songs, Early Grave and These Arms of Mine, pretty much hit right in Carl's and my wheelhouses. 1950s blues. Man, the roots of blues is written all over about those songs. Early Grave, if he was still alive, I could see Howlin' Wolf covering that song.
Yeah, that's kind of the feel that I was getting when I was writing that song.
I bet you were. Boy, I nailed that one. I don't usually get that one.
Good for you, man.
Yeah.
I heard a little bit of Bobby Bland in that last song. The song we just listened to.
There you go.
Yeah.
But you really did go back and capture the essence of the roots of blues, the 1950s blues in both those songs. That's why I played them back to back.
Yeah.
But
well,
they're great, and I'm glad I hit that one. You sound like Howlin' Wolf, man. It sounded so much like a Howlin' Wolf song. I could see you at Chess Records recording that.
That would be too bad they weren't still around like that, huh?
No doubt. So, Carl, anything else you want to add about those last two before you move on to the next album?
No, I mean, I'm just listening and I'm smiling from ear to ear, Jeff.
Seriously, me too.
Just to hear someone, you know, that I had a slight influence on just play his heart out. And one thing I do have to say, I really like your voice on these.
Well, thank you.
You know, I didn't tap you as a singer, my friend. I'm just saying that.
Well, I'll be honest. I never considered myself a singer either. But then I thought, you know what? I didn't think Bob Dylan was a great singer either. But he sang all his stuff, so why can't I? That got me to stop being so shy about singing because I was writing the songs and I couldn't get somebody else to convey the feeling or the passion or whatever that I was feeling and cover that. So I just started singing myself, and I just broke out of my shell and started doing it. And, you know, I mean, I find the secret recipe to being a decent vocalist is singing with conviction more so than anything.
I would agree with that 100%, man.
Same way as being with a guitar player. You know, I mean, I'm not the greatest guitar player, but I play with a passion and with conviction, and then that helps me the audience, and they seem to like it, so that's a cool thing, I guess.
And one thing I've noticed over the years, you're not afraid to go to a different octave with your singing. I mean, I'm not saying it was all flat back in the day, but you know, I notice that as your albums progressed, you were taking it to a different levels on everything.
Well, I started getting more confidence within myself. And to get back on to, you know, the location where I was born and raised and played, you know, the other people in the bands and stuff, they were always so negative that they actually started making me very self-conscious and making me doubt myself by their negativity. And then I was at the point where I could not let them influence me like that. So I just broke out of my shell and was like, you know what, hey, this is me, you like it or you don't, but this is who I am and this is what I do, and your negativity about whatever you want to say about me, it's not going to affect me, and I'm not going to let you bring me down. So
yeah,
but for a while there were a few people here in town that were really, you know, trying to blackball me and you know, saying a lot of negative things. And I think it was out of, you know, their insecurities or their feelings of wanting to feel more important or whatever. And they were actually starting to make me self-doubt myself. And that's not going to happen. So,
Well, I was around you a lot around that time. You know, it seemed like, and I even caught grief. I even caught flack from people. You know, it's like, well, you know, what are you around Jeff for? Jeff's going places you aren't. You know, I mean, that was basically my feeling too. And, you know, when I was doing the vet jam and all that little bullshit you happened that you couldn't play there, my God, you would have been the headliner. You would have blown all those people away.
I tried to help out with a lot of things, you know, and I've offered, you know, great roadworthy equipment and all kinds of stuff. And I was always turned down because for some reason they just didn't want to accept me. So it's like, all right, well, you know, I'm at least trying to help out here. And, but, you know, it is what it is, you know.
It is.
You're more determined, that's all.
Okay, we're going to do one more album. And this one, Southern Sun, and it came out in 2020. You brought it out during the pandemic, I take it. And
it was 2 weeks after we recorded it. We went out to San Jose, California, and recorded this album. And it's my favorite album so far. Unfortunately, 2 weeks after we came back from California, everything shut down with a pandemic, and it pretty much put the music scene on hold for 2 years.
Yeah.
So, but I feel like this album is probably some of my best work to date, but unfortunately it didn't get out as much as I wanted it to.
I agree on that. And I think on this one, you really kept your blues feel, but you went more to a Southern rock feel. And I think it portrays through the album, especially the second song we're going to hear. It's one of the best tribute songs I ever heard to the Robert Johnson whole story. So we're going to hear I Don't Want To and 49/61. So let's get to it.
I know
Damn, dude. You said you went to San Jose to make this album, correct?
Yes, yes. I had one produced by Kid Anderson. He plays guitar in it for Rick Estrin and the Nightcats.
Ah.
And he's a multiple Blues Music Award producer, award winner, very, very good guy. He put the whole thing together. So he did a great job. I was very happy with that album.
Okay, we're going to back up to when we're talking about adding the harmonica. Where did the horns come from?
That was on the suggestion of Kid. He brought in some studio musicians to lay down some tracks on stuff. And that's what I hired him for, was to produce the best album that I could get out of this. And he had unlimited resources, and he brought in some guys to lay down horn lines and stuff. So, and that's where I'm going with these songs, where you bring in other musicians who can add things that you may not hear. And he heard all that stuff and brought it in, and it just took the songs to a whole new level of creativity.
Yeah, you had no intention when you went out there putting horns on that song, and here we go.
No,
that's fantastic.
No. Yeah, and I've always wanted to do an album that had a lot of soulful stuff with horns, backup singers, you know, stuff like that, choir. That would be my ultimate album to do, would be something to do something very soulful, like from the Motown style of, like, you know, like maybe something from the Commodores or...
sure.
You know, there's just so many, Sam Cooke and
yeah,
you know, just all those guys. There's so many.
Yeah, I was also going to mention that the horns. I mean, okay, so you go into the studio, you have no idea they're bringing in the horns. Then they do. What was your, you know, your reaction? Like, this is really cool, or you know, or you're just like, I can't believe this is going so well, or just you know, I mean, just an idea of your reaction there.
My reaction was I was very happy because it brought more power to the songs, and that's what I want to convey, is I want power. I want something to punch out at people, and it brought in a lot of dynamics for the music, and it was actually a lot different than people who do know my music. They would see that I've reached out to a different realm this time around. So I thought it was a really cool thing to add.
Absolutely. And I agree 100%.
Yeah, and the cool thing about it was the subject of that song, you know, Robert Johnson, where it's always just a blues-type song, anything about Robert Johnson, like Crossroads and all that. And the way you jazzed it up is just fantastic. I just love that song.
That whole song is one chord.
Really?
The key of B.
Yeah, it's the key
of B. That's it. There's no chord changes.
Wow.
It's just different different voicings of different instruments, but it sounds like a whole song, but it's only one chord.
Yeah, it sounds like a major production on that, you know?
Yeah.
Sounds like like they had the whole Neil Diamond band behind you or something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Chicago.
Really
cool.
Yeah, right.
Fantastic, and I'm glad it's one of those songs I picked. I was glad I picked. And every song I picked tonight, I tried to get a real cross-section of what you do. You know, I mean, I could have went straight blues or straight this. That's why I threw Funky Candy in here, like, oh, Jesus, not Funky Candy. But, you know, it just shows the versatility of Jeff Fetterman. And that's one of the reasons I wanted you on the show tonight, so that people can see this versatility. You know, they're not just listening to one album. They're hearing you go from here to there, and you know, from the 50s right up to today, and that's why we're doing it. Okay, I'm gonna make you listen to yourself two more times, Jeff. That's okay. All right. So we're still on the Southern Sun album, and this is just a beautiful song. I've been playing two at a time, but I'm playing this one. And then the last one, we're going to talk before the last one. So this is Memphis Sky. This is Memphis Sky. Mm-hmm. That's just a beautiful song there, Jeff. It really is.
That's one of my favorites I've ever written.
Yeah, I can tell. Now, who went to San Jose with you? Ralph and John both went?
Ralph and John and the other guitar player that's on that album, his name is Eric Brewer. He's from Erie also. He's a fabulous guitarist, and he's the one playing the solo on that song.
Oh, great. So you actually, that's another thing I love about your albums, your songs, is you're not afraid to not be the star of every song.
Not at all. It has nothing to do with that, man. It's about making music. It's all about making music. The music is the most important thing, first and foremost.
Right. Yeah, I notice that on every song. I mean, you're not afraid to give other people solos or anything like that, where so many artists that, you know, like, have their name out there, like you, Jeff Petterman. Everybody expects, oh, this is all Jeff Petterman, but no, it's a collaboration of so many great musicians that you know, that you love to play with. And I mean, you do love to play with these guys.
I
see it
guys like family. Yeah.
Yeah. Even, I mean, it doesn't even matter what gig it's at that I've seen you at. It's just, you have so much damn fun up there. And you make sure everybody else has fun too when they see you. Okay. Carl, anything on that song?
I'm, you know, it's just a nice blues ballad, man. I'm just digging it. That's all. Don't worry about me. Go on.
You're just a dude in the back seat, right?
Yeah, I'm the third wheel here, and I'm happy with that.
He's just along for the ride with the wind blowing in the
air. There you go. He's the guy in the center seat on Wayne's World when Bohemian Rhapsody is playing. That's Carl. Okay,
yeah.
And I broke these last two songs up because this is a cover song that everybody's covered. But nobody's ever covered it like Jeff Petterman, and that's why I wanted to play this one. Carl, this is All Along the Watchtower, like you've never heard it before.
Okay, I'm into this. Let's hear it.
Okay, you got Hendrix, Dave Mason, Clapton, the guy behind the counter at Rite Aid that plays in a weekend band. So many people have covered this song. Why? That was phenomenal. I mean, what you added to it, I mean, of course, you never come out thinking I can do this better, but you can add your own little flair, your own little touch. Did you go to San Jose with that song in mind? Form?
Not in that form, no. I did want to do the song because it's one of my all-time favorite songs. Hendrix really, really nailed that song. And in my opinion, nobody will ever cover that song as good as Jimi Hendrix did. And I'm being, you know, me being a huge Hendrix fan, I wanted to pay homage to him. So I wanted to re-record that, you know, out of respect for him as a musical artist. And, you know, of course, with Kid producing, that's what ended up coming out. And I was very, very pleased with that.
Oh, that opening was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, Carl?
Yeah, there are two things I want to talk about very briefly. Okay, so you decided to do this song. Let's talk about the copyright of the song. What happened, you know, how was it allowed you to do this song? Because you don't have the ownership of it. You have to go through certain hoops.
Yes, you have to buy a license for it. You can buy the license for it, and then you can record it as much as you want and do whatever. As long as you pay the licensing fee, you're fully permissible to do what you want to do. So, of course, I mean, I've done a couple covers on, you know, some other albums before, too. And you, once you get the license fee paid and you get the clearance, you're free to go. So, but that's all for yourself before you actually put the album together.
I love how you played that song pretty close to the vest. I mean, you stayed, you know, right along the melody and all that with Jimi Hendrix. But, boy, you added so much more to it.
Yeah, we tried. We tried to keep it, you know, into the realm of Hendrix, but add our own little touch to it as well.
Beautiful. Well, how did I do pick it up?
That beginning of the song is really good. That I just wanted to ask you what, you know, I mean, you've listened to the Hendrix, of course. What other covers of All Along the Watchtower have you listened to and maybe influenced you on that?
I've heard a few different versions. I know that, but he was real big back in the 90s, early 2000s. I can't think of his name right now. I can't remember his name right now. I'm sorry.
You basically worked off the Hendrix version, though, right?
I'm sorry, you're cutting out. What's that?
Oh, I know. That's this Blog Talk Radio. You basically worked off the Hendrix version, though, right, for that song?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And then you added your own little parts.
Right.
So, Jeff, how'd I do picking out 12 songs for you?
Well, that was great. You know, I mean, I've heard those songs a million times, so I'll be honest, I don't get too excited about them much anymore because I've heard them so much. But if they come off on fresh ears and people like that and it gets them somewhat pumped and liking it, then that's cool. I've done my job on that, you know, so that makes me happy.
Let me run over real quick again. We played three albums, songs from three albums, Bottle Full of Blues, 2015, 9 Miles to Nowhere, 2017, and the last four were from Southern Sun, 2020. Okay, what's ahead next for Jeff Fetterman? What are you doing, man?
I'm just playing a few shows right now. We're not playing a lot. We get kind of busy in the summer, but this summer we're taking it kind of easy. We're only doing right now, I think I probably only got about maybe 25 or 30 shows booked.
Only 25, 30. Okay.
Yeah. Now, like it was 2 weeks ago, I did five nights in a row. I did a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Those ones, they kind of tend to take out the energy out of you for a little bit.
Yeah.
But
remember, tomorrow you're back to being a fucking janitor. So
come back to me a janitor tomorrow. But you know what? I'm only a fucking janitor for 8 hours. The rest of the time, and out of 24 hours, I'm a musician.
Right. Great. You're a musician disguised as a janitor.
Yeah, exactly. I'm writing some stuff. I have another album written right now. Yeah, I do play some of the newer stuff I've written out a little bit, but I'm really in no rush to re-record anything new right now. I'm just kind of laying back and enjoying it, just kind of playing regionally. And I'm not really going on the road too much right now because it's just nice to just sit back and just stay within a 100-200 mile radius right now. So.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you had songs in the bucket ready to go, and when do you think you'll be recording again?
Whenever I feel the need to do it. You know, right now I don't have a real need or a desire to put something else out right now. But eventually I will, you know. I mean, I'm just going to take my time. You know, I'm getting, you know, we all get older, you know, we slow down and things.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of happy, you know, just kind of sitting back and playing, you know, a couple of 5 or 6 live shows a month and just kind of taking it easy right now. So,
well, we're very, very happy, Carl and I, and all the listeners that you took time out for us tonight. And I hope we exposed you to some more people. Our show's been, you know, we got a pretty steady listening crowd, and now they heard heard somebody new, basically, to them, maybe. And there's some people out there that, you know, that know you, that tuned in. So we're so glad. Anything else? Yeah, go ahead.
You can go on my website.
Yeah, I actually have a question or something. I know throughout your career you've played with some pretty famous people, and we haven't really talked about that. I just want to give our listeners an idea of who you've worked with and the top-notch talent that you've worked with. So go ahead.
I've worked with Kenny Wayne Shepherd numerous times, Popovic numerous times, Papa Chubby, Jimmy Vaughn, Samantha Fish, Joe Louis Walker. There's many, many, many of them. You know, I almost worked with Greg Allman, but unfortunately he passed before I could get that chance. T.C. Coleman, who was the drummer for B.B. King, I worked with him. Al Green's bass player, John Williams, I worked with him. There's numerous. Molly Hatchet, 38 Special. When I played the show at 38 Special, Larry Jungstrom was playing with them, and he was the actual bass player for Lynyrd Skynyrd when Skynyrd put their first band together with the original people. And then, you know, so, I mean, I've played and I've met many, many, many well-known musicians. There was only a couple that I've really ever really wanted to meet. You know, most of them that I've always wanted to meet, I've had the chance to talk to them, hang out with them. But there's only a few that I haven't met yet that I would like to meet. Greg Allman was definitely one that I really did want to meet.
Yeah, that would have been great.
But he was definitely one. And then I was actually supposed to do a show with B.B. King, but then he ended up, you know, getting in hospice, and then he passed away. Who else? There's another one I'd really like to work with would be Government Mule, Warren Haynes. I really like watching
a lot of them. Oh, sure. Absolutely. I've seen them live.
Yeah.
I saw them on their Dark Side. I saw them on their Dark Side of the Mule tour. They played the entire Dark Side of the Moon album. Fantastic.
Oh, cool.
Okay. Yeah, I got one question about all these famous people. Have any of them ever said, drop everything, go with us?
No.
Okay. I always wondered about that.
Yep, nope, they never have. But, you know, I have noticed all those people like that, they are the most down-to-earth, humble people that you would ever meet in your entire life. I mean, I've met guys in cover bands that have an ego so big you can't get through the door.
Yeah, exactly.
To a Grammy-winning multi-platinum gold-selling artist who just hangs out with you and has dinner with you, you know.
And so. I found that when I worked concert production during the 90s, too.
Yeah.
It's the ones that have no right to be a dick are the dicks. So
yeah,
basically.
You know, but, you know, I mean, to
okay,
each their own. I'm not judging anybody, you know. So.
That's it. All right, buddy, we're out of time here. So, what a show. This is fantastic.
It was. Thank you. I appreciate the promotion of the music. It means a lot.
Give us some your website and where they can buy the albums and all that. So give us some promotion here.
You can get to my website, jefffetterman.com. You can order music, T-shirts, any type of product through there, or you can go to like cdbaby.com, order music through there, or you can even do a Google search of my name, and it'll pop up in a million different places of where you can buy the music or download music and stuff like that. So
you're all over YouTube. Every song on here I got off YouTube.
But I appreciate everything, and I hope you guys have a good night.
All right, man. Thank you very much for joining us, Carl. I'll give you a call after the show. All right, and tomorrow night, we're doing this again. We're doing it with Tyler Calkins of Marshmallow Overcoat. So it's like Bradford weekend plus Monday. And it's,
there you go.
So
I like that.
We'll have Tyler on tomorrow night. Jeff, thanks so much, man. You just made the best show I ever had. So
thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Okay, gentlemen.
Jeff, really proud of you, man. And keep rocking, my friend.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Will do. Thank you.
Okay. As those cool cats say, we'll see you on the flip side.